Hi guys, this is Chuck Lavelle, and you are listening to Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shaw Show on BBS Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shaw Show.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shaw Show. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles, my new book. It features over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. And it's available now at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. Guitar shredding virtuoso George Lynch has reteamed with former Dokken bandmate Jeff Pilson, who we just talked to a few days ago, for a set of new studio recordings that turn pop music classics into powerful metal anthems. The two have previously made metal magic together as a duo on the 2003 album Wicked Underground, which was recently reissued on vinyl, as well as other projects such as TNN and The End Machine. But this new batch of recordings, entitled appropriately enough, Heavy Hitters, stands apart not only for its outstanding roster of players and vocalists, including Head Bullet Boy, Mark Torian, Fishbones, Angela Moore, Kansas native Will Martin, and drummer Brian Tishy, but for the jaw-dropping song selection. If you've ever wondered what an amped-up, full-throttle version of Carole King's I Feel the Earth Move or Prince's Kiss or Oasis, Champagne Supernova, or Madonna's Music, then this is the album for you. As a special treat, the band has released the first single from the album, a powerful rendition of Duran Duran's Ordinary World, which is also my favorite, featuring Martin on vocals, offering just a small taste of what's in store. When George Lynch joined Dokken in the early 1980s, success came very quickly. As history proves, much of the band's album sales and credibility is the result of George Lynch's guitar abilities and songwriting. With Dokken, Lynch recorded five albums from 1983 to 1988, all of which did remarkably well in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. This worldwide success made George Lynch one of the most influential rock guitarists in modern music, even earning the band a Grammy nomination in 1989 for Best Rock Instrumental. In 1989 was also the year that George parted ways with Dokken and began the new decade with a different approach. Enter the Lynch Mob. By the early 1990s, George had become a marquee guitar hero throughout the world. Please welcome, just right after his trip out in the woods, please welcome American hard rock guitarist and songwriter, best known for his work with heavy metal band Dokken and his post-Dokken solo band Lynch Mob, George Lynch, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, George.
Thank you. That was you did your homework.
Thank you.
You're a professional hiker.
Okay, I did not know that.
How do you be a professional hiker? I don't think that's such a thing, but there should be.
So what did you guys do? You're out in the wilderness for how many days?
We'll play right here around the week, I guess. I don't know. We just, my wife and I, we still have plenty to do at home, so we're constantly dragging ourselves back to Southern California where we live.
Right.
But we try to get out as much as we can and just stay out. And we were out a couple of weeks ago. We're out in Death Valley. And shot up to Nevada and up into the Sierras and kind of did that loop. And this week we're out, we went up the coast of Highway 1 north of the Bay Area. And then we're looping around up to Humboldt and then back down through, the Cascades and then back down through the Sierras again, down 395. I used to live in a little town called Greenville. Up in Sierras, and so I haven't been back there since I was raised by my godparents up there, and I haven't been there since I left, and so I wanted to go back and visit, so we might do that, and so yeah, and we've got a daughter up here in college, so we're visiting her as well, and then my mother lives in a small town in the Sierras as well. So we're going to focus on her again. So then we get we do a lot of hiking as well, and just dispersed wild camping. I've got this sort of adventure, four-wheel drive, solar, insulated, and everything. I've also got a small studio built in here, so
wow.
I can still do work. Both of this can work from our camper, and be out doing stuff you want to do.
Yeah, my daughter does the Appalachian Trail every once in a while, which is kind of cool as well. Right? Yeah. Have you done that?
No, I'm not an East Coast guy. I'm strictly, I love the West.
Right.
Particularly the Southwest. I'm a desert guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done parts of the John Muir Trail. I've done the High Sierra Trail. And John Muir Trail is, part of the Pacific Crest Trail, so technically I've done a good bit of that, I don't do the kind of backpacking I used to do, it's just, as you get older, it gets a little more difficult, I believe as you get older, you get a little spencier about doing things, if you have no problem doing your younger, when I think about some of the shit I did when I was young, I cringe.
I agree with you 100%, man.
Yeah.
I'm there too.
Yeah.
I fall down a lot now.
Where's that? I mean, there's no regrets, right? And I'm glad we did the things we did when we were younger.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Now, so I feel like I've dodged so many bullets that I want to be careful, make sure I don't have to dodge too many bullets.
Exactly. I'm right.
My way through.
Yeah.
But we're dealing with, but we let me out, it's just challenging right now,
mm-hmm.
With COVID and winter closures and so forth.
Yeah.
And California is tough too, because in a state with 40 million people, I mean, it's really tough to find, to get off the beaten path, it really is. I'm not one of those guys that, gets online and makes reservations 6 months in advance to go hiking.
Right.
You had about $150 worth of stuff, and you go, now you got to spend, $10,000 up here.
Exactly.
And then you have all these local permits and plan and GPS and, whatever. I don't know.
Were you a Boy Scout?
I was, actually, yes.
Huh.
I was a Boy Scout. And my grandfather was one of the founders of the Explorer Scouts.
Really? Yeah, my nephew's what's the highest honor? I forgot. The
Explorer, I believe.
Yeah, well, he was in the Explorers. My sister-in-law was very much into the Explorers. What is the top scout guy called? There's a, I forgot what you call it.
The Grand Dragon.
Or something like that. I don't know, but he won one. Oh. No, he's not that. I want to make myself clear. But he had a top, one of the top honors. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, they're terrible about that.
Exactly right.
You don't want to go to the Mambo convention, accidentally. Unless you want to.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, I think a lot of people that do camp, you know, were Boy Scouts, I think, at one time. That's where it all starts, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great time. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned discipline, learned skills.
Right.
But, you know, in retrospect, I have to say that the organization, for all the good things you can say about it, it is sort of a pre-military prep thing.
Right.
It really is. It's organized like a military organization, and I think it's sort of training, indoctrinating you into that mindset. You know, young people into that mindset. Right? I don't know how you feel about that. You know, I've been sealed, so.
Right. Well, the good thing is they're outside, they're outdoors, they teach them how to do all those skills, you know. That's a good thing.
But I'll tell you what, when I did move away, I got some trouble when I was young. That I was forced to move, as I mentioned earlier, with my parents, in a very remote place, live a lot down and hunted and fished, and, raised animals, and, you know, we really lived that way. It was wonderful, and I liked that. But, my guitar was taken away from me.
Really?
And, I was getting quite good. You know, I was really kind of to the point at 15 where I really had developed style, and it was very exciting, and I was kind of making some noise in my little neighborhood, you know, and started to play, you know, in bands and stuff. And, there was some damage, you know, and it was really, really, really cool. And, I was sent up there to live with them, and I shaved my head, took my guitar away for a year, and it changed my playing forever, you know. So it was like one of my biggest regrets, or, you know, it was kind of sad, because I kind of looked at, you know, when I was finally released from there and got back, you know, got the guitar back in my hands, I had to start all over again, and I learned again, of course, but I built a completely different style. So I felt that it was really a lost opportunity, you know, had I been able to continue on with what I had.
Right.
My momentum that I had going at the time, that I really had to stop, relearn, and I turned into a different type there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was better or worse, but I think it was worse.
I just remembered he was an Eagle Scout. That's what I was trying to remember. My nephew.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Eagle Scout.
Yeah. Eagle Scout is, I think, before you become an explorer. It's been a while.
Okay.
I can't remember, but it's been like 50 years. but I think Eagle is the top scout.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into explorer, which is another whole level of scouting.
Right. My sister-in-law passed away a few years back of cancer, and she had all the explorers that she knew showed up at her funeral, and there must have been like hundreds, and it shocked everybody. They came, you know, and lined up, and it was pretty touching.
Yeah, what was her connection with them?
Well, I think she did a lot with the explorers. I don't know exactly what she did. I don't know, but she was very much into it. Yeah.
Well, it does teach you, you know, to build character, and I think that is an overriding, really important thing. You know, no matter if you're a musician, or especially if you're a musician, or person dealing with the business of being a musician, you know, it's important to character, and also to try to work with people that have it, which is,
yep,
at least in my rooms, challenging to find. You know?
Yeah, well, more kids should probably do that instead of watching their phones all day, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's a very strange business, and I gotta be honest,
mm-hmm,
you know, being in it for, you know, 50 years, I still don't understand it. And neither do a lot of my professional friends.
Yeah.
Big bands, so I still don't understand it. So really, it's a complicated business to pitch your head up around.
It is. Well, I talked to Jeff. I gave Heavy Hitters 5 stars, man. I loved it. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. I would say that, you know, there are just beautiful, powerful moments, and a lot of them. And there's a couple of things that sort of, you know, even I skip over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not too many, but there's a couple spots, you know. And most records are like that, but, if I had it to do it all over again, I would say I would probably have done another 4 or 5 songs just to see how they come out, because
right,
it's, you just never know how it's going to come out. And mm-hmm, what we did is the way we recorded this, because it was during, you know, during the pandemic, so we were limited to how we could work together somewhat, so. We were working remotely. We didn't have the luxury of doing those extra songs, but in a normal world, you know, how normal the records, we would have done a few extra songs just to see, you know, and cut out, you know, the ones that quite make great. And, you know, we didn't have that luxury, this time around, but, you know, and the other thing too, I don't think, you know, maybe we have this sort of self-imposed pressure to make every record,
mm-hmm,
a wall-to-wall record with everything on it. It's, I mean, it's a, you know, it's dark side of the moon. And, you know, looking back, there's a lot of great classic albums. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff on some of those records, you know.
Uh-huh.
It takes repeated listenings, and
right,
you really have to think about it, adjust it, and I think that's okay, you know, that's healthy, because, you know, it gives you sort of a comparison to kind of compare anything else to. I mean, everything is a song.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any deep tracks. I don't really think of that as an album. I think of it as a collection of singles. So
right, right.
What we were trying to create was an album experience. So we're, Chip and I are old school, and we think that, you know, we imagine our the listeners dropping a needle, like we did when we were kids.
Exactly.
And flipping it over and turning it over, put it on the B side, and then having those deep cuts, and having an album beginning intro, and having an outro, you know, and having it be majestic, and all these different kinds of things that we grew up with. We understand that that's not how people listen to records generally now, mm-hmm, but that's still how we do it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. I bought my first 45. I think it was Purple People Eater, and then it was The Twist by Chubby Checker. That was probably my first couple of 45s way back when.
64?
Yeah, early 60s, yeah. And
I'm right there with you. I had my stack of 45s and my little turntable with them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good old days.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had AM radio, too. We had AM, FM radio, and my first amplifier was actually my father's GE stereo, console stereo.
Oh, wow.
And I found a way to use the reel-to-reel tape input as a pre-amplifier, and I amplified it. And I clicked through the stereo speakers while I was playing along to whatever record I was playing on the turntable.
That's cool. Yeah.
And that's basically how I taught myself, you know.
I tell you, man, I want to tell you, you're a genius when it comes to that. It's unbelievable how you figured out how to, you know, build guitars and work with amps and, you know, all those electronics. You know, it's, you know, it takes a great mind to figure all that stuff out, in my opinion.
Or out of necessity.
Yeah.
near the mother invention. So I mean,
right.
You know, the kids, you're sitting there and you go, okay, there's four different holes here. I'll just keep putting shit in.
That's one way.
Genius. It's, you know, you want to play guitar fast enough, you'll find a way.
I took electronics because I went to broadcasting school. It was owned by CBS, and I had to get my first, second, and third class FCC license. So on paper, I was smart, but to actually do things, I had no clue, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a huge chasm between book learning and applying it.
Exactly.
Know, in the real world. And I have the reverse problem. I have practical musical knowledge, but no book musical knowledge. Yeah, I don't know theory. I can't read a chart. You know, I don't understand modes and scales really. I don't know, you know, big people chords.
Yeah, but you know, all the great legends never did. The Beatles and Hendrix, nobody learned, you know, music that way. They never read music.
I don't know this. Is that true?
Yeah. The Beatles, they couldn't read music either. That's why they had George Martin. That's why they had George Martin. He put it all together for them on paper.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm sure Paul McCartney knows what he's thinking.
Well, maybe now he knows, but in the beginning, they had no clue, man. And I talked to Ronnie Montrose. Ronnie didn't know music either, you know?
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Hendrix
too. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't read music.
Okay.
All the greats, man, in my opinion, couldn't read music. It's all from the heart. It's all from, I mean, you put what you're thinking, what you feel into the instrument, and I wish I could do that. I really do.
I think all of us, whether it's different ways, if we don't know music theory per se, we still understand theory in our own way.
Right, yeah.
Because we have a way of viewing the fretboard,
right,
intervals in music.
Right.
We just kind of make up our own language to describe it. We just have a different language to describe it.
Which is better. Yeah, it's better because, you know, reading music to me, and like you said, theory, it's like mathematics, and that's boring. You know? It's no fun.
Well, not just reading music, but understanding scales and modes, especially modes, circle of fifths and things like that, I think would be very helpful for anybody.
Right.
And I've never been able to grasp it. I've tried and tried. Not the lack of time, but, you know, continue to try. And I just feel now that at some point I just want to learn just out of spite.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. But you learn your own style. You mentioned that you couldn't play like Stairway to Heaven note for note or a Jimi Hendrix tune note for note because you didn't want to because you wanted to develop your own style. And I agree with that. You know, there's so many guitar players that, oh yeah, they can play note for note, but they can't play anything else. Their own original stuff, you know?
Yeah, but also the other part of that is they're not mutually exclusive options.
Right.
In other words, you can learn how to play Stairway to Heaven and still have your own style.
Yeah. But you're a great guitar player, all right? I got to give you a compliment. You're an excellent guitar player, man, and you've done some great things.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Oh, you guys, always learning. That's a good thing.
I'm 81, dude. I'm having it down. With your shred and tap and two-handed shit. Yeah, I got plans.
You're always a busy guy, I can tell you that, man. And you release so much music over the decades. You know, it's amazing how busy you have been.
For me, it's like super fun and super not super easy, but it's like, you know, it's what I do. So it's easier for me to do that much shit I don't know how to do. So, you know, I love it. I got a studio and I've got everything I need, and I'm able to. You know, people care enough to where I'm able to continue to output work, you know, and records and create interesting projects with people. And people are interested in that and subsidized it by buying it, you know. And so, I mean, if I could only do one thing, that's what I would do. I would slit in the
Right. Yep. That's your sanctuary.
Yeah, that's just, you know, the potential, because of the amount of control you have, the potential to create what is the thing in your head that you're dreaming about creating someday, you know, mm-hmm. thing that you're, this is so elusive, is potentially attainable in a studio.
Yep.
And until you accomplish that, and you actually, you know, catch that dragon, you know, you're going to cause it to chase it. And that's what studio for me is all about.
Well, what do you want to accomplish? I mean, you've done the, you know, the rock, heavy metal thing. Is there anything else?
I want to write better songs.
Okay.
There's two things. I think there's a two-pronged kind of thing going on in my head. One is to be a better songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I listen to classic rock all day long, and R&B, and soul.
Right.
Everything else, you know.
Right.
And I always listen to pop music, you know, country music. I'm listening to old country. I'm like, what is a great song?
Mm-hmm.
We all want to do this, you know. We all want to write that song that's, you know, from the heart and people sort of feel it, you know.
Sure.
And I just, you know, I'm not a singer. That's the problem, you know. Is I am in my head.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, I'm Aretha Franklin. But while I'm in my mouth, it all fades away.
Yeah.
So I'm limited in that respect. I want to, you know, I want to write better songs. I want to be a better composer, and which I think is more important than playing a great solo. And then secondly, on another note, is to just create this badass music with badass guitar, which is also running through my head, which I've never quite accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
To you know, like when I hear it in my head. And then I finally get down to doing it.
Right.
It's like similar, but not as good. So I keep chasing that ideal that's spinning around every once in a while in my head that I hear. I'm like, God, why is it that I can imagine it, but I can't play it?
Yeah.
And I think if you talk to anyone that kind of like does what I do,
mm-hmm.
you probably share that.
Oh yeah, that's common. That's common, I think. Yeah. I think it'll come to you. You just need, I don't know, the inspiration or some kind of push that'll get you there somehow. But,
Yeah. I think what it is discipline.
Yeah.
I do lack a little discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I get the whole heart of myself, but maybe I need to be just a little more disciplined about, my technique. You know, I rely solely on improvisational inspiration.
Right.
I change that up. I think I've known that about myself for decades.
I can tell you're hard on yourself, and you're not the only one. I talk to a lot of guys that same thing. They're very hard on themselves. You know, they try to achieve what, you know, almost perfection, or I don't know what it is, but. I don't know, certainly the fans don't think that way.
Yeah, know? But they're not hearing what I'm hearing in my head.
Yeah, but they're happy.
Well, they'll be happier if I freaking nail this shit once and for all, but what?
Yeah,
anyway.
I know what you mean, though. So, I know what you mean.
Like, we're not all Hendrix, you know, we're not all Jimmy Page. I mean, some of us are just terrestrial, you know, human beings that are doing the best we can, but...
Well, I think even Hendrix was hard on himself, man. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Very humble, very modest.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And he, you know...
It wasn't Paul's modesty either. I mean, he had a certain sense that he knew he was a badass.
Right.
He knew that.
Right.
And when he got on stage with Clapton, he knew it was going to blow Clapton's doors off.
Yep.
But he was constantly being, you know, critiquing himself as well. I think that's very healthy.
You know, he would have done so many great things at Electric Ladyland. It's a shame, you know? He just got that open up. Yeah. I talked to, you know, a lot of people say he might have been in the fusion, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
hard to say, right?
Yeah, it is hard to say.
Hendrix at 82.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not playing as old, you know, like a lot of legacy guys probably playing through modern gear, probably playing through a pod or, you know, or whatever, you know, virtual amps that they have now.
He would have been playing maybe with John McLaughlin and maybe Carlos Santana. Who knows? You know? I don't know.
He would have tried some different shit because I heard that before he died, his aspiration is what he was trying to do is put together a big band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a, you know, like a nine-piece band. Kind of change it up a little bit, you know, do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have definitely done that. A couple of tracks, I want to talk about just a couple of tracks on the album real quick. You did a great job with the Joan Osborne song. That was incredible. Also, one of my favorites, Chaka Khan. I mean, You Got the Love. You did an incredible version of that. And again, they're your takes of all their songs. You didn't just play the song, you know what I mean? Which is incredible. Carole King, I Feel the Earth, completely different, you know, incredible cover. Ordinary World, which is one of my favorite songs. I always love that song, and I'm glad somebody finally nailed it. You know, love that. And, another great song, Kiss, which I thought was better than the Prince and Tom Jones version. You know, they almost sounded like a little bit of T-Rex in a way, you know, on that track.
You mentioned that earlier. Did we do that song?
Yeah, the Prince song.
Are you sure?
Sure. Kiss, the original song by Prince.
Well, what's the Madonna song we did?
You did, let's see, Madonna was Music.
Oh, okay. So
yep.
We did Kiss. Okay. All right.
You got so many things going on. And one track that really fit your repertoire was the REM song. You know, It's the End of the World as We Know It. That song looked, it was kind of like it was made for you guys to play, you know? It was great.
Yeah, we just thought it was so cool, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a great, great album, man. I really enjoy it. It's one of those albums, you know, you want to just get in your car, take off, and just listen to the music, you know?
Okay. And, Jeff and I just we live very close to each other and
right.
try to work together as much as possible. So when we get an excuse to do a project, I just look at everything we do as an extension of our writing days and docking. Because him and I were kind of the main writing team for most of the songs.
Right.
And as it gone, and they didn't have input, but, you know, we were doing 80% of the music, so
I want to bring up.
Yeah, so I just looked at this extension of that, and then we did, you know, we did our LP, and we did the TNN record,
right.
And now we've got TNN, the End Machine. And I think all those are really just a continuum of the same thing, you know, they're just the honor emotion, never changing the name, just called it one thing, because they really are. That just means Jeff still trying to, you know, do what we're trying to do in the 80s. So.
You guys work great together, I think. George, tell me about the latest project you have going on, The Banishment.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not, I mean, I wouldn't really call it the latest project. I mean, it's been out there for a while, meaning that we've been working on it. We, meaning Hayes, who is the engineer and programmer, and myself,
right.
Started this about, I guess, 7 years ago.
Oh, wow.
We've gone through various singers, from Andy Lyon to Tommy Victor from Prong, and up to recently where we joined forces with Dennis, who's finishing the album with us, and is a really good fit. And so, at this point, we are doing an Indiegogo campaign to try to, you know, get a little bit of fan support for finishing the record, rather than go the traditional label route. And so, if anybody's interested in helping us out, you can go to Indiegogo and check out the Banishment campaign.
and we're actually giving out a bunch of cool stuff. Devix and I collaborated on a whole bunch of art pieces.
Right.
I mean, you know, well, it's debatable whether you call it art, but, you know, Devix is much more of an artist than I am, but we both share canvases, so he would do half a canvas, I'd finish it, and the different sizes, and it's pretty interesting, and, you know, then more traditional, you know, we're giving away more traditional stuff for support, like, obviously the CDs and vinyl and t-shirts and things like that, and a few more other oddball interesting things that we're giving away, so, yeah, so there's that. So we plan on having that out, probably mid-February, that's what we kind of look at.
Oh, great.
Late February.
Now, you heard something about, you heard the words dream punk, and that's what got the project going?
Yeah, and I think that's an apt description for some of the material,
right.
Actually a minority of the material. There's a song we're working on right now, All or Nothing, and it's definitely fits that description. It's just that it's definitely got a punk element to it, especially in, well, in the vocal realm it does. And the song itself is actually a big departure from the rest of the Banishment material, in that it's almost got a kind of funky country vibe to it.
Really?
But with a punk, sort of a punk ministry-esque vocal, so it's really, it's an interesting hybrid.
That is.
And we're going to probably be releasing that, just putting it out there, just for people to check out pretty soon. We're in the mixing stage right now, so well, that'll be our second song that we've just kind of put out there for folks, just so they can hear what we're doing, so if you're interested in getting involved in our, you know, get behind the record or whatever you want to do.
Well, that sounds great, man. you're into so many different types of music, and you put out so much music over the years. It's incredible. It really is. Plus, you know, all your little ventures into all the other things you do. It's besides building guitars and equipment. It's amazing. It's amazing what you do. It really is. Like I said, you're a true Renaissance man.
right. Well, probably without the philosophical underpinnings. Well, the bar is pretty low in this day and age, so.
I
don't know. Yeah, they call it George Lynch a Renaissance man. You know, you sunk to a new low.
Well, give yourself some credit.
Yeah. So, you know,
uh-huh.
The way I kind of look at it is, you know, in a lot of other occupations, I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of productivity that's expected, right? So, you know, I mean, name a profession, you know, so, you know, if you're a woodworker or, a delivery driver or a cop or, you know, I don't know, you know, just name anything, and, you know, working in a factory or something, I mean, it's a certain amount of output that's expected of you. And, to earn a living wage and your compensation, whatever that might be. And I feel the same way about what I do. I just feel like, you know, I'm not working in the mines. I don't have to be a lumberjack or something dangerous. I can play guitar and write songs. Which, I'm not saying it's super easy, but it's easier than working in a coal mine. So I kind of appreciate and to show my appreciation, I like to show some respect for, you know, the gift that I've been given and how lucky I am, you know, to be a musician in a tough world, you know. So I work really hard at it. Please feel that, so I can feel like I've earned it, you know what I'm saying?
But out of all the things you've done in your lifetime, what do you think you're most proud of?
Raising my kids.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Yeah.
Yeah. And it hasn't always gone the way I expected to, and that's okay. You know, you just kind of bend the bow and shoot the arrow and fly straight, and that's all you can do.
How many children do you have?
5 kids and 5 grandkids.
Wow.
That new granddaughter is old, so.
Yeah.
Daisy May.
That's awesome.
It's just stunningly cute and beautiful.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy how it captured, they captured your heart. You know, so.
I've got
for them and everyone else, so you try to invest a little bit, you know, or sure. Do everything you can into, you know, their happy, their future happiness, and hoping it, you know, to go down the right road.
It's funny, I've got 5 grandkids, too. And,
oh, wow. Well, yeah. You know, I guess we're tied then.
Well, it's your turn. You can beat me. It's all right.
I don't know. What do I win, though? That's the thing.
Yeah, grandkids are wonderful.
Get a trophy or a medal or something like that. I don't even care.
Yeah, I do a lot of babysitting, me and my wife, and we love it, man. We really do.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, you think, well, are they going to be musicians? And I hope that they all are, just because it's such a healthy thing, you know, to have some sort of art in your life,
right.
You know, to express yourself. It's even, I was talking to my wife about this, she has a yoga studio, and she's constantly asking me to be involved in meditation, and mm-hmm. I've tried it, you know, scores of times over, you know, decades, but I've never really been able to, I think, do it properly, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But then I just realized that when I play music, it's what I'm doing.
Sure.
I meditate, you know, when I'm in, when you're in the, quote, zone.
Exactly.
Yeah, we get in. Yeah, so, you know, just for that alone, you know, it's a good thing for kids to have be, you know, a part of their life, just for their own betterment and peace of mind and balance and, you know. So I think as you, when you ask what's the thing I'm most proud of as far as an accomplishment, I would say that it's just, you know, raising my kids and, you know, infusing them with a little bit of my quote-unquote wisdom, earned wisdom.
Do any of your children look like they're headed towards the like a music career, or are they any musicians in the family?
My oldest son.
Okay.
Is he's a guitar player and has been, went to JIT and. Never followed it as a career, more just a thing that he does as a,
right.
You know, just out of enjoyment, and it's a personal thing for him, and it's interesting, he does have my style, you know, which, so kind of the same, you can tell he's just definitely didn't fall for too far from the tree, but you know, he's great, and he loves, he's a little bit more into like a funkier style.
Right.
He really likes funk and he like that, and plays in a church group.
Oh, cool.
You know, just to do something. And yeah, it's really cool. Plays for all the right reasons.
Yeah, I covered a show here in Sarasota area with Dickie Betts. It was a benefit for a little girl, and it was the first time I saw Dwayne Betts, his son. And if you closed your eyes, you would think that Dwayne Betts was Dickie Betts. It's amazing how he picked up his style.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a thing about nepotism. I don't know. There's a valid thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing about it that pisses me off, too. It's unfair.
Right.
But, you know, it is nice to see that, you know, this was just a you know, if you're passing on good genes that do good things, I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's just when the opposite occurs, I have a problem.
Now you know.
So, like, it isn't what I mean specifically by that, but I can all fill in the blanks.
George, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some very interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, I mean, if you know, your fantasy had no bounds.
No bounds.
It wasn't even like it was just, of course, it's never going to happen, but, dude, I'd say, well, I mean, it seems so ridiculous to even suggest it, but, and of course, we're just pretending, you know,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But, you know, to be called up by Miles Davis. That would be it for the monster, lifetime achievement award thing, right?
So you have a little bit of jazz influence in you?
Well, I wouldn't know if I'd call it jazz. Well, I come from a school of kind of, what would you even call it? I'm a gut player.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I don't use my head, but you know what I'm saying? It doesn't come from any kind of school place where I have any kind of, have any boundaries other than my own limitations. Technical ability to play something with my own limitations. And maybe my imagination. But I don't know that I can't do something because I'm breaking the rules because I don't know the rules.
Right.
So I think that would qualify me in some respects to have played with Miles, but of course, again, we're just talking about pure fantasy here. And of course, I'm not, wouldn't be really capable of playing with somebody of his stature and his ability, but it's kind of a thing, I would aspire to if you gave me a chance.
Do we see a fusion album in the future for George Lynch?
Well, Jeff Pilson and I, who, we work together all the time, we look close to each other, friends, lifelong friends, and we love writing together, and that's always been a thing. We've got a number of pretend pet projects that we've had since the 80s.
Yeah.
Just kind of, we're always talking about doing them, and we've never have really put any energy into it because it's just for fun, but one of those is a progressive thing called Zimfquidusvin. And we even got a couple of song ideas and things we always kind of mess with. Of course, we're never probably going to really do it because, it would be kind of a waste of time, but it would be fun. Mm-hmm. We had this sort of talentless hair band modeled after other bands of that genre, including ourselves, we had names for everybody in the band, and some of those names were given to us by Gene Simmons.
Really?
Yeah, when I spoke, Gene was kind of hitting us up at one point where we were talking, some mention of it in one of the Van Halen books, Van Halen Rising, but he was originally interested in working with us. But told us we all had to change our names and christened us with our Gene Simmons names. I was John Lynx.
John
Lynx. LYX.
Yeah.
And, Don was Adam Wolf.
Adam Wolf, that's a cool name.
Yeah. Nick Brown was Mickey Thunders.
Mickey Thunders.
And Jeff was, fuck, I can't remember. Well, I remember three out of four, but, anyways, Hollywood Glam Dolls was the name of the band.
Hollywood Glam Dolls.
Glam Dolls. Yeah,
like
we did everything but write the songs, which we could probably do in the whole album one day if we wanted to. Because the whole idea is to play as bad as possible. That's like so bad that it's like, okay, this is the chip. But just get to that and just achieve that balance. These guys are really bad, but I think they're taking themselves real seriously.
Right.
And then all the solos, I wanted to play with left-handed. I can't play left-handed, so, am I really bad? Which would be cool.
Yeah. Well, you got to go through with it, man.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun.
That solo playing is something I'm really good at, actually.
That would be fun.
Again, it's a tricky thing to find that balance between authenticity, and you almost have to kind of close your eyes and remember what it was like when you were first starting to play, and you couldn't quite hit, stay in key, and everything was sort of halting and undisciplined, and it wasn't real.
Yeah.
Just kind of trying to hit stuff and you weren't nailing it.
I still play like that now.
It's great. I love it. I actually have more fun doing that than I do playing like for real.
Well, get Gene as a guest artist,
Yeah.
He'll do it. So. He'll probably do it.
I don't know about that. Gene, come over to set up with me and Jeff in our garage and
yeah.
pretend to be a bad 80s band.
That'd be cool. That would be awesome. I'd promote the hell out of that album.
Well, we do that when we're all in real bad 80s bands.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Speaking of 80s band, I got, Mike Reno coming on Monday, tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great singer.
Yeah, I haven't, see what Loverboy's up to.
I actually did a corporate gig with Loverboy. It was a couple of years ago, and was really, had forgotten how, that they had material that actually was really cool. Some of the deeper tracks, and the heavier.
Yeah.
And he's a great singer. They were great, actually. I was really, shocked, because I had sort of remembered them as being ultra cheesy and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, then when I saw him again, I was pleasantly surprised at how good they were. And, you know, they grooved really well, had cool, interesting songs, and, you know, good licks and good grooves. And like I said, Mike Romeo?
Yeah, Reno. Like Nevada.
Reno, yeah. He was great. I was like, wow, this guy's gotten better.
Yeah.
In the last 35 years or whatever.
Yeah.
We did a talk and did a tour with them.
Oh, really?
Early 80s, yeah. So.
Yeah, working for the weekend is always a mainstay on, you know, top 40 classic rock, whatever, radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like their deeper tracks, a little bit more of that person. They have that good balance, you know, which I think Dokken tried to achieve that as well, as having a good balance between that kind of popular, more radio-friendly stuff.
Right.
And all the harder stuff.
Do you know Danny Zalisco? He was a concert promoter?
Yeah, in Arizona.
Yeah. I got him coming up too. He's got a book out. Lots of pictures and things like that, and he's talking about all this. Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he's got some interesting stories to tell.
I've always wanted to be a concert promoter.
I hope he doesn't throw too many people out of the bus.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully not. Hopefully not.
I won't be promoting any shows. Too many enemies, you know.
Well, I'll let you know if he talks about Dokken.
Oh, well, that's okay. I talk about Dokken. We gotta learn from our past mistakes. That's how we get better.
Yeah, exactly right. George, anything else you'd like to promote or chat about?
We've got the Heavy Hitters record out right now.
Yep. It's excellent. Five stars.
On Deadline Records and then again, like I mentioned, the Banishment Project campaign on Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, right.
Yeah. So, we got artwork there. We got a guitar we're giving away. We got some pedals we used on the record that we're, awarding as gifts to people who have gone into the finishing of the record project. And, like I said, that'll be out mid to late February.
Awesome. George, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I'm glad you enjoyed your camping trip. Thank you for your patience, by the way.
Yeah, that was a little tough. I mean, we're hooking up there, and I was, windy and, 9,000 feet up somewhere in the high Sierras, the campfire, the sun going down, in the middle of nowhere. Fortunately, I've got this cellular device that pulls in cell signal for me.
Right.
Because I need that to work where I'm at. And it works sometimes, but it is very iffy still, so makes it difficult. But thanks for being patient with
me. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you had a good time. When you get a chance, just send me a picture like you tried to the other day on my...
Yeah, I did. I resent that to you.
Oh, did you send it? Okay. I'll check my phone.
Yeah. If not, I'll resend it.
Okay, George, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You're a great musician, and we're looking forward to some wonderful things in the future, and we hope you get back on the road again soon.
Well, we're all waiting and hoping to as well. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, George. Okay. All right, man, take care. My best to the family.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Two giants of metal George Lynch, Jeff Pilson retained for a killer covers album, Heavy Hitters, the new album from guitar-shredding virtuoso George Lynch and former Dokken bandmate Jeff Pilson for a set of new studio recordings that turn pop music classics into powerful metal anthems. Available on both CD in a deluxe digipack and on limited edition colored courtesy of Deadline Music, a subsidiary of Cleopatra Records, Inc. It's a great album. I recommend it highly. 5 stars all the way. You can also purchase the album at Amazon.com. And the new project coming out soon called The Banishment, hopefully sometime in February. It's a new project featuring George Lynch. And you can donate to the project at www.indiegogo.com. The Banishment is a three-piece passion project in collaboration between George Lynch, programmer and multi-instrumentalist Joe Hayes, and LA-based artist Devitz. Original recording sessions began in 2015 when Hayes and Lynch set out to challenge themselves and charter new territories after living through two separate and already prolific careers. Stepping out from behind the curtain, Joe Hayes has co-written and produced this new single with his first functioning band in over 10 years. Meanwhile, Lynch has been met with opposition, pushing his creativity into darker, more subliminal and chaotic territories since the 90s. Finally, together, they found a solid workflow and composed dozens of plausible album cuts. For more information about George Lynch, you can visit www.georgelynch.com. That's his official website. And also on Facebook, www.facebook.com/George Lynch fan page. George is on Instagram, www.instagram.com, and also on Twitter, www.twitter.com/LynchRocks. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with George Lynch and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And also, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews directly sent into your e-boxes. And let me tell you, it's real news, people. And of course, my book, which is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, It Chronicles Truths, Confessions and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us All Free. You can order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com and amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. It got a 5-star rating from Literary Titan. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and God bless. Amen. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.